League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Brian Infinity, join us. Thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate it. I kind of want to talk about the opportunity seed portfolio that you have, and you have multiple golf businesses within that, within V1 and Galway Bay. At first, I guess my base question is, how did you kind of decide to get into each of those specific parts of the golf business, knowing that, you know, there's so many different ways to get involved with it?
Boy, that's a great question to start. I'm not sure I've had enough coffee. No, I think if you look at the investment thesis for me, because our portfolio is based around our balance sheet, so we don't go out, raise and manage a big fund. It's based off my wife and Denise. We manage the fund ourselves. So we have an adage that we use, whether we're going on a mission trip, funding something, social benefit, whatever it might be, which is how we started Opportunity Seed, was really to create this pool of money to alleviate the pay-to-play sports conundrum that's really crushing, I think, not just in the U.S., but it's really starting to reach globally, was to make sure that our feet follow our money. And so if you look at that, I think it's a good way to, again, whether you're donating money to move into a next thing, to make sure that your money's going to work well. And so for us, it was with V1, a company that the founder wanted out. And so he basically said, hey, if I could do this over the next year or two, it'd be great to kind of transition this away. And I helped sit next to him and make a transition for him, which I think worked very well for him. And ironically, this year going into 23 is my transition out of that company and handing the reins over. So my feet followed my money. We got an investment from Michael Jordan and his group, Black Cat Innovations, in May of 2022, which is really a great catalyst for us for all the right reasons that you'd imagine. Most of which is, you know, MJ is a bit the same in that his feet followed his money in terms of his ideas, which is let's democratize golf. And we've got a great platform to do that. And let's make it accessible to all. And so I think if you look at that as a business and it's been around for 20 some years, we'd say, yeah, we're kind of doing it. So V1, that's the long, short story there. And Galway Bay, not far from the same. Terry Perlman, that started the company 7 years ago, few years into it, said, I want to grow it. I want to get a little bigger, and then I'd like to move on. And so we kind of helped him do that. And in both businesses, probably like most serial entrepreneurs do, the wrong thing. I didn't step back fast enough, which was, hey, what does the next CEO look like? And then I'm sitting there at the helm. I really do enjoy it. I'm an operator by nature. All the businesses I've had my thumbprint on that by being in the business. And so it's fun. And as you know, from 2+ decades being around golf, it's you're around a great group of people. You know, most of the time that you're outdoors or even when you're indoors, you're laughing and having a great time. You're participating. So it's just a great place to be.
Is your kind of view on investment as a shorter term investor, a shorter term owner, or as a longer term owner? Or is it kind of a case by case basis? And if that's it, you know, case by case, how do you kind of figure that out? Is it we're going to invest with a 5 to 7 year horizon, or and then we have an exit plan, or do you kind of get in there a year or two and then decide, okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's our timeline.
Man, a couple of zingers in the beginning. I love it. You know, it is case by case, but I would tell you that it's not short term. So we do know that the chasing of that quick buck, this is going to sound very Pollyanna, but it doesn't work great for the founder. Because equity is the most expensive thing. If someone's poured their heart and soul into a business, they've tried to protect equity as much as they can, but most likely they've had to raise money from someone. And that's typically when I come into play, is like, hey, we're raising money. If it's right before an exit, most likely there's either duress or this cataclysmic event that's already going to happen. And so I'd say neither one of those typically is good for the founder when they're just about to exit. I'd rather see them keep all of their equity. So in that case, and I've done this many times, my role is actually better just a mentor to come in and say, hey, I think you're on the 5-yard line. Let me help you punch it in. Do good things for good people. And I'm a walking testimony that it will come around to you in spades. So that's the short-term view. I typically just say, look, you don't want my money, and you certainly don't need to go raise it from X, Y, or Z. Let's just get you over the five-yard line, and I think you'll do well. The mid to long-term range, really, it doesn't have a timeline. So unlike most funds where they'd say, hey, man, in 5 years, we have to turn and burn this business, it may take longer than five. It may take two. I mean, who knows? But for the most part, I think if we can say, look, we do have a long-term horizon, more than 3 years, but if it takes seven, if it takes eight, I've got an indoor sports facility I opened up much around the time you graduated from college in 2001. It was supposed to be 7 years. 21 years later, I still own it. It's a cash flow machine. And so in that case, you'd say, gosh, kind of just hold on to it. So we leave the range there for the founders to say, when it's your time, we're not going to push you to have to sell. But I will say the end premise here, sorry, long answer, is that I do believe that every business should be built to sell. That doesn't mean you have to. It just means that you've operationalized things. You've put the simple into process. You measure your results, right? I can get into all the idioms, you know, from Covey and beyond that if you don't measure it, it doesn't matter. But the truth of it is, if we don't set our goals and do all those things, then you have a hobby. And I'm not interested in investing in hobbies. And I think most spouses of entrepreneurs are like, I'm not interested in being the spouse of a guy who's got a hobby as a vocation. Maybe once you get there financially. So I think if we set it up that way, then when someone does come along and say, hey, this is really interesting, I'd like to fold it into a bigger business, or I'd like to take it over, you've buttoned it up, you know what the value is, you know what the value is to yourself as the founder, and it makes it a little bit easier. So hopefully that gives you a good idea of what we're kind of how we look at businesses in general.
It does. And the follow-on to that is, what role does the people you're investing in matter to the investments that you're making, and how often are you approached by somebody who maybe isn't a fit for you personally or the type of investor that you are?
It matters immensely to us because, again, we're not managing somebody else's money, and I don't need an X return to make this next quarter's numbers to make a distribution. So I guess you can beep this out later, but I've got a pretty firm no working with a-holes plan. And I built and sold a company, then worked for the company that bought us for 2 years. And it was 2 years and 2 days. And I know the exact timeline because for 2 years and 2 days, I worked for a-holes. And so I vowed never to do that again. And at the same time, I do believe that as we invest our money, we are working for that founder, right? We being our fund, Denise and I, if the founder wins, we win. And when we win, our foundation wins. So this is a really, really good ecosystem. And I share those things with the founders, that our feet will follow our money. Our money, where there's profit or the company sells and something comes, we're putting it into our foundation that's going to help kids. And that might be in sport. It might be in art. It might be in music. We don't discern between that. We just want to alleviate someone have to pay to do their thing. And for, believe it or not, for some founders, like, yeah, it's not for me. I was just kind of looking for a check, and I want to buy a bigger yacht, faster airplane, or whatever the thing. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I've got plenty of friends who have very fast planes and nice big boats that I get to go on. Just for us as an investment thesis, there needs to be that, because that's who I am. That's who I am on Tuesday. It's who I am on Sunday. It's who I am on next Wednesday. So if I'm talking about this sort of civic approach to doing better in the world and doing better in our community with the resources we get, time, treasure, and talent, if the founder of the other company doesn't believe that, which gets back to your original question, you can see we're going to be a bit of oil and water. I'll probably want out, or they'll want me out sooner, and versus, yeah, let's lock arms on this and let's do some good. And along the way, hey, you can't be civic if you're not profitable. So let's be clear. If you don't make it, you can't give it away. I think that works really well, right? And for us, it has, you know, we're not batting 1,000. But our numbers are definitely better than the general fund, which is about 22-23%. You know, they can weather the eight that don't work for the two that do, because those two are big home runs. I'm not looking for eight pieces of carnage on the side of the road. So, you know, we know that's somebody's life and heart and family and equity and all that stuff that's poured into it.
For your, where you are with V1, and you're kind of on your way out, as you mentioned, what is kind of your role in shepherding it to the next ownership, to the next phase of the business, as opposed to maybe where you are now with Galway Bay, relatively not new into it, but not as far, not toward the end of it?
Yeah. With V1, we really had a great idea, a great platform, great technology that had been built 26 years ago, or at the time, 19 years ago. And like anything, you've been around it long enough to know that, real player used to be a thing, right? Well, if you kept building code on top of that, there'd be a lot of spaghetti wire on top of a not so stable base today. So with V1, we really knew we had to go in and change the guts and really be innovative in how we're going to think about moving this company into 2025 and beyond. And we've done that. And MJ and his team were really instrumental in giving us the financial catalyst to say, it's not going to be fun and sexy. We're going to rebuild the back end so that we can work with our 17,000 golf pros and millions of golfers to give them a better experience for the next two decades. That was a really unique investment criteria, because most want, how much marketing are we going to do, and how many new products are we going to build, and how much sizzle are we going to create? And it was great to have partners come along with us. And part of that is, once we get to that point, we now need to optimize cash flow. I mean, they're an investor and they're a partner and a serious one. We've got to be able to throw off cash now and prove that that foundation was good. And that's where we're at. So I'd say that doesn't need Brian Finnerty. I'm a visionary by quote. My head is in the clouds. I like to think about what's coming next. And oftentimes, I think the guys at V1 today would tell you, it might work a little better when he's not around, right? And I just spent 2022 going through throat cancer. So I didn't have the choice of choosing to not be around. I mean, God made, got me through it. And I was away for almost 6 months. And in that interim, the team, the executive team, did a phenomenal job with our board of directors of really, hey, let's stabilize business, get the throw off cash. And kind of baptism by fire, we learned, I think Brian Finnerty's role, maybe just stay in the industry and keep feeding opportunities to V1, but don't need to be there operationally. So it was building up our executive team to make sure we had systems and process in place. We've got great people doing that. And it's kind of running, not set it and forget it, but it's pretty automated at this point. And then Galway Bay is maybe the beginning part of that, right? Is, okay, we're growing so fast, got all this cool new stuff. We need a vision for where things are going. Got a great operational COO in Mike Brown, who makes sure the trains are running on time and everything's getting done, from suppliers to inbound shipments to our marketing systems work. And for me, that's great. As you can tell by the smile on my face, it gives me juice. And I know for our partners, I'm in here babysitting their money too. And we've got a good runway with that company, which is good. So yeah, a little bit of end of one story and kind of the beginning of the next.
Is it, as you think about maybe future investments or your next thing that you're looking at, what other than, a steady business that you think you could get into, what are those criteria? Is it, hey, this would be fun to do? Or is it, do I like this person? I mean, what kind of gets your eye attached to something at first? And maybe isn't what gets you over the finish line to invest, but what draws your attention in the first place?
Man, this is going to sound so unscientific, because it really is my gut gives me a pretty good indication of, I think there's something unique here. And I've missed plenty of investments that were like, oh man, I wish I would have put my money there. And I've made a few that are like, yeah, that wasn't a very good idea. But most of the time, it's something that for me as the consumer, I would say, wow, that solves a problem for me, or that makes my life easier. Or if I'm going to do XYZ in this sport or in golf specific, wow, I could really see myself doing that. And that would be fun. The old quote, I can't discern whether Brian Finnerty is having fun or at work. And there's Chantabron has this great long quote about that. Most would tell you they can't tell the difference for me, right? Whether I'm out surfing, playing golf or whatever, I typically have a smile on my face. When I'm running a board meeting for a group of partners, we like to make it fun, not goofing around, but we make it enjoyable. And so I think for me, it's, does my gut say this would be a good place with a product that solves a problem? And then ultimately, yeah, it's got to have a person in charge that I would say, yeah, ethically and from a true ethos perspective, they get it. And so I would love to have them over for Thanksgiving dinner. And my wife and I would say, man, we are so glad you're here. And at the end of the night, we'd be richer for it. So again, not very scientific. But then I think when you dig into the details, most founders of companies face, less than 10 or 15 million would probably say, I've been doing a good job of guiding this thing, but I haven't really spent a lot of time at home doing the unsexy work of operationalizing it. And so when I can show them a pro forma to squeeze out another 5, 10, 15% of true bottom line profit by just getting more organized, not changing anything about what they do or where the company's going, and it actually gives them a better platform to grow, most of them would say, wow, okay, therein lies the value, right? Feet following the money. Brian, if you can help me do that, while I stay kind of head in the clouds and worried about the future. And I think we've got a right beginning of a criteria. So it's not scientific, but in a way it kind of gets down to that point, right? I'm a math guy by nature. So I take the soft stuff and then we put it to math. And some great ideas just don't have the right math behind them. Either the founder thinks it's worth too much, or the market's not big enough, or whatever it might be. So then we get down to the math of it.
Do founders, especially kind of the small business level, tend to think not about, you know, 5 basis points here and there? They think about, do they think about if the 5,000% growth instead of 100 basis points here and 200 basis points there, and not trying to grind it out as much?
Sure. And that's what they're good at, right? So that's why I would never really emphasize to any founder, don't go back and get stuck in the muck, right? At the end of the day, hire a better director of finance, or if you're lucky enough and make enough money, a CFO and someone who does come from not a Ford or a Mercedes-Benz, but maybe someone who's been through a few different startups, maybe even cashed in a little equity, understands the value of that, and does know that 5% makes a huge difference to the bottom line. Not because we're going to cut to win. I'm not a fan of that at all. I think you only grow when you're out in the future working on top line revenue. And most founders are great at that. They are the best salesperson for their company. And so I just come in and say, look, I know you don't want to come do this 5, 10, 15% work. That's why you haven't done it. And I don't want to change your mind, because most investors will want to come back and say, Ryan, damn it. What happened last quarter? You know, stop getting on the road, start sitting with the CFO, and we need better numbers. Get back to that budget. And I'm not saying be irresponsible, but I'm saying hire the right person to do that, that feeds you these numbers on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis, who's watching that scorecard. But you get 3 numbers to worry about, not 30. That's the CFO's job. So sometimes that's music to a founder's ears, like, oh, you kind of get me. With others, they don't even want to hear that, to your point. And they're like, I'm just going to go work on 10% more growth versus X amount on save. And again, that's where I'd say we're probably not going to be very aligned. Right? Because as an operator, I do know the value of 5, 10, or 15% on the back end.
Well, kind of last question here, and that is, this is kind of more general. This isn't necessarily about golf or even specific to you, but it kind of is. So for people who are kind of running a small business and maybe they're thinking, hey, we're at a place where maybe we can take on investment, or we're considering taking on investment, and not just to exit, or maybe it is to exit. What do you recommend to those people to get their ducks in a row before they start reaching out to try to find people to make it, could potentially be a transformative investment in their business?
Yeah, great question. I always, so let's work backwards. I think that's the easiest, right? Start with the math. I always say the best thing about math is it has no emotion, it never lies, and it always tells a story. And so if you believe those three things, which I believe have been true over time, let's start with the math of the business, because out of that, it has no motion, so I can step back from it. Real estate works great that way, right? I love this piece of property. It doesn't really throw off a lot of cash. So in the business, if you can say, look, let's start there, because then you and I can have a really good conversation when we remove emotion out of it. It's your baby, right? I'll pretend that you're the founder there and it's your baby. And heaven forbid I say anything that you're like, hey, wait a second. I've been doing that for 20 years. And I've been crushing it there. How dare you challenge that thesis? So we go back to the math. I'm like, how's that working out for you? I mean, you say you love to do it, but you're making like $9.50 an hour when you edit all of your videos versus having a video editor, let's say, right? Or whatever. Okay, math. And then from there, what's the story, right? At the end of the day, does the story play out? And just in those two stages, I think for most founders, they'll either, okay, we're going to hit the pause button and go back to mathematics to make sure the story is correct. Or we've got a great story, and now what we need to do is actually amplify how we're going to grow, right? That's that third step, because growth has to be there. I don't think anybody in that small to medium sized category is throwing off enough cash that they would say, hey, it's just a ATM and we're going to sell it to somebody who needs more money than ATM, so they're willing to pay us a multiple. There's got to be a growth plan. And so if the math works, story validates it, and there's growth, then I'd say they're ready to go kick the tires, right? And you know, the last step of that, which is get into the marketplace with, you know, a couple of good mentors. The amount of guys and gals in the peer group that are just willing to spend 15 minutes with any young entrepreneur, young could be 50, but I'm in my first business, is, hey, here's what I think my business is worth. Here are the comps I got in the market. But man, I don't know. Can you help me? And someone might say, man, I think you're leaving a lot of chips on the table. Others might say, hey, in today's market, that's pretty aggressive. And I think you're going to lose a lot of those people that would invest because when they look at you, don't seem realistic. And so, yeah, you go back to, okay, then let's go back to the math, right? So it's a nice kind of rinse, wash, repeat plan that tries to take most of the emotion out because, again, those founders, it's their baby, right? They didn't buy some Subway franchise. They invented something. And so I try to do that first. And I think golf is great like that, right? That's why V1 does what it does, because it's video. It's you watching your own swing. We're going to take emotion out of it. If I'm watching my own swing, there's a little bit of like, ugh. but it is what it is. Somebody telling me that my swing starts with an over-the-top move, if I can't see it, I have to trust that person and we have to build a relationship. It takes time. I'm not sure that's really happening. I see the ball go straight, but I'm really manipulating the club face, blah, blah, blah. See it on video. There's kind of no motion. I see the score in V1 game. Yeah, you shot a 78, but you dumped 6 strokes around the green. Like, where do you think we need to practice? Put the driver away. It's no motion. It's just data. Yeah. So I think when we come back there, that's a really good thing for founders.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us about a wide variety of stuff. I appreciate that. I'm glad you went along with me on it. Thank you so much for doing this, and hopefully we can do it again.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And thanks for 2 decades of keeping the dream alive for a lot of guys. I think just kind of hearing it and being motivated by it, that's awesome. So thanks, Ryan.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.